when you go all in, people feel that you are all in on them. They feel that. And talk about the experience. You are literally creating that experience, and it's tangible. You are then able, knowing so specifically who they are, and being so in tune with that, you were able to create messaging that quite literally sounds like it's coming from their mouths and their minds. And they will literally feel like this is meant for them. And there's no, basically, to have 100% of those people is, you know, that's the difference between having like maybe 1% of like the pie. It's like now you have 100% of these people all bought in, all super loyal to you, and you've carved out this unique authority in this space as well.
Welcome to the Making Money Podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and before I introduce Paul, I have to say this is not financial advice. Sitting next to me, as always, is the wonderful entrepreneur and business owner, Paul Ng. Paul, how are you today?
I am doing well, Ben. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, today we have a very special guest. The lovely Sarah Ackerman is here, a friend of former guest Angela, and another individual who's part of her sort of young entrepreneurs group in Denver. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. You started a friend of, and I was like, wait, are we not friends? No, I'm just kidding. No, thank you for having me.
Also a friend of mine. Happy to be here. That's true. Cue the Toy Story. You've got a friend of me. I wanted to bring Angela onto the show, not only because she has great energy and I think a lot of good mindsets around things, but because you're in an area of business and entrepreneurship that we have not yet really covered in this podcast, especially related to marketing and strategy. So, but before we get into all that, I wanted to introduce a little bit of a new segment to the show, which I didn't even tell you about, Paul. So we're just bringing this on you a little bit. But we talk a lot on the show about practical applications, and a lot of it's very informational. However, we want to get to a point where we're combining that with mindset. So it's not only about information, but there's a mindset around money that we want to incorporate that will help propel you to your next level. And this is perfect timing because Sarah and I have talked a little bit recently about the idea of abundance mindset, which is such a key and important part of the mentality of an entrepreneur, especially like if you want to really be successful. So, Sarah, I would like to hear from you a little bit. What does the abundance mindset mean to you, and how did that sort of become a theme for you recently?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So abundance mindset for me right now at this point in life is everything. It wasn't always that way. So I've come a long way, I guess, like kind of diving back into my history a little bit. I always kind of was just like that person that was kind of save, just like we're just money. Money doesn't grow on trees. Like that's something you just hear growing up. And, you know, it's not easy. So you need to work hard for it, and then you need to keep what you make. Right. And I was just that's kind of my entire mentality. As I got older, I came across like, you know, the early financial independence, retire early movement, all of that. And then it got even worse with like kind of my scarcity mindset. And I didn't see it as that. I saw it as just holding on to everything that I earned and with the goals of what that's going to mean for me in the future and how I'll be able to utilize that later in life. So I think I started on the opposite end of the spectrum is basically what I'm saying. And that scarcity mindset is something that I, up until only about like a year and a half ago or so, really started to understand what that was doing in my life. And then I started to apply, because abundance is not just about money, right? It is abundance in every aspect, and that's where the mindset really comes in. But I started to notice it with my money mindset, and then I started to very actively start telling myself, I think we need to be thinking about that a little bit differently. And I think we need to keep that money moving that we're accumulating. I think we need to start thinking about it as an unlimited resource that is easy to come by, because if other people are doing it, then there's no reason why I can't either. And then along with that, as I started to apply it to my money mindset, I started to realize that it applies to literally everything. And where I think that the difference between scarcity mindset and abundance mindset is that scarcity implies lack. It implies that there is not enough for you, or not enough, which means there's not enough for everyone. And abundance mindset truly embodies the opposite, where it is, I believe that there is enough for everybody. I believe we all have this unique brilliance that we can bring, that unique value to the world. And in turn, there is enough abundance for everybody to thrive if they are contributing in that way and providing that unique value. And so I don't think that we need to be like, right now I'm actively like wanting to meet other marketers and other like people and even doing almost exactly what I'm doing, right? Because it shouldn't scare me. If anything, I think we should lift each other up. We should learn from each other, and there's enough for everyone. So that's where my mindset has started and then shifted these days. And it's really been something that I believe is the key to what I'm even building now, is just I'm taking a giving an abundance approach to what I'm offering people, and I'm trying to provide as much value up front as possible. And then, you know, just seeing where it takes me. And I think that's the best investment you can make.
Do you feel abundance is a skill set that can be learned and adapted to, or do you feel that the abundance mindset needs to be adapted to and continually coached?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Are you asking if it's something that an individual can work on by themselves, or if they need support? Is that your question?
I think both sides of that. How one learns the abundance mindset,
oh, yeah, okay,
and how do you keep that motivation?
Mm-hmm.
Because the world throws at us all these curveballs,
yeah,
and it makes it so that you feel sometimes so challenged that the abundance mindset is roadblocked, I think is a good word. You're roadblocked, or there's a fork and now you're scared.
Yeah, life is kind of life, right? And something that I'm actively working on is checking in with myself. So yes, you can do that. I've surrounded myself. It's all about environment as well. What you create for your own personal environment, and then the people you're surrounding yourself with to be able to support this type of mindset and be on the same page. I'm really actively intentional about who I'm surrounding myself with. If that's a coach, and if that's something that is helpful to you, I definitely think there's space there for that. For me, I'm choosing to be incredibly intentional with my awareness throughout the day. So, I mean, I have a routine, everything from the morning, fostering that mindset for about 45 minutes to an hour before I even turn on my phone. Right. And that's just who I am now. And that really does help calibrate me for the day. And then when those forks in the road, those roadblocks come out of the woodwork, as they inevitably do, I have other systems in place to put myself in check, to realize the triggers that I experience emotionally and, you know, externally, and how that manifests within me. And I have systems in place to kind of recalibrate from there. And they're just little things. I mean, but again, you can have a coach to help you with that on a regular basis, or you can come up with your own systems to be able to calm your nervous system, really, is all it is. It's really just a nervous system. It's like your body, mind over body, really. And also perception, reframing situations to try to see the opportunity in them. I've always been an opportunist, and I've tended to see the positives over the negatives. But even more so now, embodying this mindset, because I think even if you look at some of the things, I'm sure we've all been through challenges, and some of the stuff when you're in it, it's just like, this is never going to end. Why is this happening to me?
Feels like doom.
Absolutely. But yeah. How many times can you say though, like now looking back on those, you can really start to see that map of like, wow, okay, well, because that happened, I learned this, and then this happened, and then I grew in this capacity, and look who I am now, right? So I think if we can try our, it's hard in the moment, but I'm actively trying, and it's growing every day, right? It's a journey to try to see that in the moment when it happens.
I love an idea that you kind of alluded to originally, which is noticing how the difference between scarcity and abundance changes the way you relate to other people.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Talking about when you have the abundance mindset, it manifests in a certain generosity. It's not a hoarder of, if I give a little, they're going to take a lot and then I won't get any more. It's almost like a farmer sowing seeds. It's like, yes, I could eat these seeds, but if I plant them, what's going to grow?
Absolutely.
And you're out there with these other businesses, even people who could be seen as your competitors, still planting seeds, networking, seeing what's going to grow. And I love an old proverb that says, the wise farmer sows in morning and in evening because he never knows which one is going to bring the harvest.
Yeah.
And that's the abundance mindset, right? Is to constantly give. And It can be powerful because once you start to see the return on it and you highlight to yourself, like, because I had this mindset, look, XYZ happened, then it becomes self-reinforcing. But the scarcity mindset,
it's addictive. You're like, oh my gosh, yes, more.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that reframing is so powerful because so often our minds have this confirmation bias and we look for things to confirm what we already believe. So if you change your filter to where you're looking for that which confirms the abundance mentality, then it becomes self-reinforcing and it can really help you grow in that.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And just to touch on one thing you said, so out there sowing the seeds, not sure which ones are going to come to fruition, right? And I think that that's so important to realize too, because you need to also have this mindset as you're not trying to hack the system, right? It needs to truly be like, it needs to truly be just with openness and like as much joy and kind of like play and experimentation, if you will. And I also think it's important for people to know like, oh, you know, I just gave this person 6 hours of my time. Like I expect now abundance to come back from them. Right. And that's not how it works. From my experience,
it may not come from them.
Right. Exactly. Like, just like you said. So it doesn't matter. It's not the person. It's just the overall arching idea. And so you just know that it's all flow. It's all energy. And so, yeah, that's how I think about it.
So the intention is another key point,
right?
When you're trying to create this world of abundance.
Abundance, right. That's me.
Absolutely.
That's my dad joke for the day.
That was a good one. No, absolutely. I think the intention is everything. Because, yeah, it has to come from a place of joyful giving. Otherwise, it's not. I don't know. I feel like I feel so excited every day to be like, waking up and meeting these people and seeing what value I can bring. And I get lit up by, you know, even just like being on a call with someone, seeing how I can help them for 30 minutes. Like I don't just met them. Like, I don't know if they're going to want to maybe work with me further. But it makes it so much more fulfilling when you're not really taking that perspective. You're kind of just really out there trying to figure out how you can provide your unique brilliance, your unique value to the world. And I think if you just lead with that, everything falls into place. Talk about money not having to be hard. It doesn't have to be if you lead from that, in that perspective, I believe.
I love that. It's very powerful. We could talk about this an hour, yeah. But we got to transition. So that's, I haven't decided. I was like, oh, maybe we'll call it like Moneymaker's Mindset. I was like, is that too much alliteration? Is that cheesy? I don't know. We'll figure it out. But it was just such a perfect opportunity because it was something that we had talked about. It's like, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you a little bit. Talk about sort of your education background. Did you go to any kind of business school or anything? And then how did you end up in the entrepreneurial world? Hey everyone, quick break from the show. If you found this information useful, if you think the show is beneficial and helpful, take a moment, like, subscribe, rate the podcast, and pick one or two people from your contacts that you think would benefit from this free information and the knowledge that we're giving you. Send them the link. Let them know that you found the show helpful. It's the only way we're going to grow. We're not paying for ads. We're not doing sponsorships or selling products. We're just here to help you make more money. Thank you so much for listening. And with that, back to the show.
Yeah, for sure. So growing up, I was always like entrepreneurial, like doing all the little things. I had like a face painting business at one point. I was doing chalkboard art for like local businesses and then like bars and stuff. I was doing like wedding signs, just all the freaking things. I was doing social media for like my church, whatever. So I was always enthralled by that space. And I was always a very like creative kind of alternative thinker. So when I did go to college, I wanted to go for like art or theater. And my parents didn't, they were just like, okay, but just, you know, make sure you're giving this all the thought. They were pretty supportive, but I ended up, you know, I said, you know, I don't want to do anything that's too pigeonholed, or I want to give myself something broad. So I literally just picked marketing because it seemed like it would be something in business that was tied into creativity, right? And that was something I just thrived in. So I was like, well, it's kind of unlimited things I could do with that. So I ended up doing, so I actually did psychology and marketing because I really liked that side of things as well. So psychology, I studied art as well as a minor, just for fun. So I studied psychology, but marketing was my main focus, and then got my little minor in art as well. And after that was continued to do some of my own things and endeavors, but really, you know, what pushed me for sure into the path of small business and entrepreneurship was I did one corporate summer internship, and I about died like 2 months. It was 2 months. And I was like, I was just looking around, and I just remember thinking, I will never fit in like doing this. And immediately from there, I started wanting to learn more about what I would want to do for myself one day. I knew that would be the goal, but I wasn't quite sure. So I started working for startups, and I worked for very, very scrappy small startups. So I was between employee 2 and 6 in like 3 or 4 startups at this point. So over the years, and I would grow with them and work directly with the owners. And I had a ton of hats and doing all sorts of things. And, you know, learned a lot doing different things and within those startup companies, a lot of them within the e-com space, some of them in like B2B market. It was all over the place. But from there, I decided that I wanted to take the leap to agency life because I wanted to see the difference between working in-house marketing and then working with an agency. And it changed everything. So working with an agency allowed me to have my hands in like 75 different e-commerce companies at once. And I was leading the charge on like the strategy front, and then leading leading teams and all that. So I was able to find what worked across the board for a lot of different companies. And that's what essentially ultimately gave me the push to want to try to do that on my own. So that was where I decided to start just doing some work in that regard for it kind of naturally, organically fell into my lap with people. They just, you say, oh, I'm in marketing. And they're like, oh, you know, can you help me with this and that? And it just kind of snowballed as it does. Right. And from there, basically built my own full service digital marketing agency specializing in e-commerce growth and full service being all the fun digital things. So, you know, specializing in paid social, customer acquisition, paid search, email, SMS, as well as my specialty, which I also have special training in, which is conversion rate optimization and digital psychology. So those are all the things that I was doing with that agency. And that was a really fun ride. When I first met Angela at the entrepreneur event that she runs, I was doing side hustle. This was a side hustle. And the first thing she asked me was, well, what would it take you to go full time? And I was like, oh no, I mean, no, this is just a side hustle. And within it was literally 2 weeks later, I was like, I have this client, they want this. If I can get this contract to work, like I might quit my job. And anyway, within the first month of attending even her events, like it just all snowballed and I ended up going full time. So I have been running that side of my business for about a year and a half full time. And it has been great. It's been very challenging working in that capacity with very bespoke, very client by client, you know, here's all the things we can provide. I've had contracts that were like just like 27 freaking services. And then I have some that are like three, right? So it's all over the map. And it's been really eye-opening as to like that building that type of business. And I started to think in the last, pretty much this summer, I started giving a lot of thought to what I wanted my entrepreneurial journey to look like from here, because I wasn't necessarily feeling it was very great and successful, but it was feeling very heavy for me. And it wasn't feeling like that was very much aligned with the lifestyle I wanted to build. I was extremely busy. And again, it's very hard to systematize. You know, I was running a team of like six different people helping me, but it was just, everything is different. It's all boutique offerings and it's all specific to each client. And anyway, so more recently I have been on a new journey. I'm still doing that, but I have kind of pivoted. I'm now doing more fractional CMO work, which has been really fun. And that's also transitioned into a new business that I'm currently building that's more focused on the digital psychology piece, as well as the basically just higher level strategy for helping entrepreneurs and business owners really figure out what is their unique brilliance and how are they communicating that to the market, and are they making that match correctly with the people that they're meant to serve, and helping them bridge that gap with communication, primarily their online and digital presence.
You mentioned CMO. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. Yeah. So that's just chief marketing officer. So with the fractional work, I think a lot of people think of fractional, they think of a CFO, chief financial officer, which is where it all began. It's new. I think it's where a lot of the world is going. I mean, it is just a fancy way to say, you know, like part-time consultant. However, it is something that I see. I'm subscribed to like all the newsletters for this stuff, and it's growing. And so CMO is the marketing piece of that. And really it's just someone who leads and owns the marketing function for a company. So companies that work with fractionals are typically ones who are at a certain level where they have some success, but they've either seen some sort of stagnation, or maybe they've lost some steam, or it's becoming increasingly hard for them to stay competitive in today's environment. They have maybe some resources, maybe a small team, maybe they have some agencies that they work with, but they don't. What they lack is clear marketing leadership, as well as a comprehensive marketing strategy. And so those are the two things that a fractional CMO brings to the table: is high level strategy, and then leadership, typically embedded within the team to get the ideas to fruition.
So if you're working on a fractional basis with a bunch of these different companies and you're talking about leadership, right? So then how often are you sort of in touch with their own staff and providing that leadership role? Is it daily, weekly, monthly? Like, how do you determine that?
Yeah, great question. So it depends on the level of engagement. There's a couple of options that I'll provide based on the size of the company or what I think they need. Most often it's typically around 10-hour week commitment on my part for any one company. So I tend to only work with around four companies at a time on the fractional front. They Typically, what it looks like is a lot of that back end, like a lot of that strategy building. And yes, that comes into play all the time, right? Marketing isn't just like a quarterly plan. It's all the time. Like, what are we doing for the forever? But it is that annual planning, the typical kind of meetings with all key stakeholders where we all have everyone sit down. But then on the more regular basis, we meet, I meet with the team. I have sometimes daily one-on-ones and stand-ups, right? We have weekly sprints. We have different weekly set meetings where we are, you know, going through the initiatives, going through, you know, who owns what KPIs and making sure that we're on track with the broader plans that are put in place during those larger meetings.
10 hours a week is a lot. I mean, that's pretty correct. Frequent.
Well, yeah, 10 hours a week. In totality, like working with each of those businesses. So yeah, it is a fairly big commitment. I again, like max I would work with is 4, but I like to stay around 3 because I like to have time for everything else in my life that I'm building.
Yeah, for sure. When you're, one of the things that's kind of interesting when you're engaging with a large number of companies is you have opportunities to see patterns.
Correct.
Patterns of mistakes and then patterns of things that work really well. So yeah. For smaller companies that you're working with, what are some of the most common marketing mistakes that you're seeing? Like, what are the things that are repeating over and over?
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So there's the pain points, and then there's the underlying actual diagnoses that I see. So when people come to me, they say something's broken, sales are down, or sales aren't growing. So they often complain about customer acquisition costs skyrocketing. Here's the thing. Here's the fun fact. It's not fun. They're always going to go up. Like it's never going to go down. Competition is growing every single day in the digital space, in advertising. In order to combat that, we need to be thinking more strategically and more deeply. And then we also need to be thinking about the entire holistic journey of the customer. So I think one of the biggest things that I have found as an issue, which is literally what fed my new business idea, is that we as entrepreneurs, a lot of times, and business owners, we kind of get this shiny object syndrome. We tend to have a lot of big ideas. We have really big growth goals for our businesses. We're like, wow, this new product, we want to get this launched. Like, we for sure think this is going to be huge. Or this new TikTok seems to be taking off. Like, we need to go do TikTok. This guru is doing this Instagram hack. Like, we need to build this type of thing, right? And a lot of times what ends up happening is we're kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall and we're hoping something sticks. And there's no actual overarching strategy behind any of this to connect all of it. And so you're all working in silos. Maybe there's different people trying different things and we're wondering why it's not, all the pieces aren't fitting together. And then second of all, I think the biggest piece of that is detrimental is that so many companies are trying to throw all of this money at ad spend or eyeballs. They believe that they have a traffic problem. They say, I need more traffic to my website. I need more traffic to my product pages, whatever it is. I need more leads. So I need more eyeballs. And that is, yes, like traffic is great, but like, what's your plan for that traffic? Are you just assuming that everyone's going to get to your website and like fall in love with you and like throw their credit card at you? Like what? Yeah. Like, so what I find.
So are you looking at conversion rates with them?
Correct.
Then?
Like, yeah. I mean, you have no idea how many people have never heard of a landing page, don't even know what their conversion rate is, don't have analytics up and running. Essentially, I mean, I just talked to a company that was running like so much money in so much on Facebook ads, and they didn't even have like the pixel set up properly. And I was like, turn everything off right now, turn everything off. And the pixel being like how you even track, how Facebook even learns from your ads. So anyway, I mean, all that to say, I urge people to think about holistically the strategy behind everything. And so I spend a large amount of my time with new clients digging into the why and this like whole, let's make sure we're actually talking about your products the right way or your offerings or who you are and to the right people. And let's make sure we have that down. And then let's make sure that your post-click experience is one that will convert your clicks into cash. Like, because clicks mean nothing unless you focus on the conversion rate from there. So that's where I work with a lot of my clients on conversion optimization and improving that experience for their customers so that they can actually convert that to revenue.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that conversion piece. It seems like the wave of the internet, as we'll call it, is all about conversion because they don't really have a tangible thing anymore in their hands. Like, we used to go into the store and touch our goods, and now we're not touching them. So we're just visually looking at it. So let me pick your brain about that visual attention, because if I'm looking at a website and I'm wanting to buy something, what makes it attractive for me? I don't know personally, because I don't shop on the web that much. And when I do, it's the same thing. I just hit, you know, buy again.
Yeah.
So I'm not really searching. So how do you make that conversion exciting and make it happen?
Such a great question. Yeah, I think about this all the time. This is literally like, I love this. I geek out on it. But if it comes back to digital psychology, right? Like, let's think about when you're buying something in the store, maybe there's a salesperson there and you're making eye contact, you're reading him, you're learning about the product, you're touching it, you're getting this whole experience, right? And there's all these intangibles even beyond like actually touching, but like the intangibles of that one-to-one experience that we as humans have developed and over time to be able to understand, like, somebody, the way they're just looking at you or the way, you know, and all of these things we need to think about so intentionally on our websites and on our landing pages. And that is everything that I do. So I'm a huge proponent of building that experience for people very intentionally, where they're not going to know, but that's, you want them to feel just as trusting and understanding and clear about your product, that this is for them, as it would if it was in their face. So I have built, like, that's what I was telling, I think when we spoke last, Ben, I have actually built a system for this, that a framework, if you will. I'm calling it, I'm still working on the name exactly, but it's basically like the Diamond Conversion Framework. Okay. And it falls into four different parts. The Diamond is basically, what I'm saying is, I believe that this post-click experience is the most valuable part of a lot of businesses, that the most overlooked yet highest value asset to their business. It's like this sales generating gem that they're just like, it's under their feet. They're not realizing, and they're throwing all this money at the, you know, the shiny object syndrome for the traffic. And so that's where the diamond comes in. And so it's four different parts and it is four C's. So just like a diamond would be evaluated off of four C's, it is just as that. So it is clarity, color, carrot, and cut. And so clarity is the biggest piece of everything. Clarity is, what is the unique value, the unique brilliance that your brand, that your product, that your business brings to the table? Who is it for? And like, who is it best for? Who are you meant to serve? And how are we communicating that within our everywhere, honestly. And so basically it's like, how are we packaging maybe your offer? How are we messaging? How are we refining that? And making sure it is crystal clear that people understand what this is and is it for them? Because nobody ever comes to your site and says, I don't really know what this is. I'm not sure it's for me, but here, take my money. No, we want people to say, oh my gosh, I have been waiting for this literally for weeks. I have been asking for this. They are reading my mind.
This is
take
for me.
My money. Yes.
Yeah.
So that is clarity. Color is the second portion of conversion rate. This is my format of for conversion optimization. Color is basically how are you showing up and how are you standing out as a brand and as a business. So that combines your brand voice. So your messaging, the storytelling is so impactful for maintaining that journey and maintaining that clarity story, as well as your visuals. So that's everything from, you know, don't get me wrong, like a pretty page is not what I'm saying here. It's like all of the different pieces put together to make people feel like they trust you, understand you, and that this is resonating with them. But it does take consistency and across the board in terms of your brand voice and brand visuals. And then carrot is, what is the weight that your brand carries? Why should people trust you? So that is huge. Talk about, you know, not having the one-to-one communication online. You need to build that trust, and you need to have be building like a proof magnet. So things like testimonials front and center, things like, not just words, right? Let's add the people's pictures. Let's add their business logos. Let's try to get some videos from them, right? How can we really make those stand out and be trustworthy? What is your authority? What podcasts have you been on? Where have you been featured? What publications have mentioned you? What is your unique experience or years in your law background, right? And then tons of other different things like case studies or, you know, all these different things for trust and authority building. And then the last is cut. So this is really just crafting the smoothest, most streamlined path to the action that you want people to take. Maybe if that's e-commerce, it's a purchase. If that's, you know, like this law firm, it's, you know, a phone call or a form submission, whatever that looks like. We need to make it so abundantly clear, first of all, that is what you want people to do. I mean, you wouldn't imagine the amount of people that don't even have like the button on their website, right? What you want people to do. It's basically asking, in an ideal world, if every single person that came to your site, what is the one thing you would want them to do? It's usually give me their credit card information and to make a purchase, or reach out to me, right? A lead. So, you know, whatever that looks like, maybe it's a download, whatever. Making sure that we are eliminating as much friction as possible and really crafting that clear cut path to that action. So clarity, color, carrot, cut combined is what I define as like a diamond level page or website, online experience. And those are the four facets, if you will, to improving conversion rate in my mind.
Do you provide those services, the four C's, to your clients?
Yes. So I have been my whole career doing that. I have been thinking this way about, conversion optimization, for a while now. I just recently though, came up with this framework for it. And I'm now building a brand to just provide these services and just train, basically provide one-on-one consulting as well as agency services to implement, as well as hopefully courses that I would like to build so people can teach themselves this framework and have access to it and make it much more accessible to everyone.
One thing I found interesting in a few minutes ago, you were talking about some of the different services you provide. And I kind of heard like two different levels. There's the strategy, big picture level, but then there's the, you don't even have the pixel, right? The technical level. And I'm curious, like, are you in, as part of your growth and your development, which of those two sides makes you feel alive the most? And which are you like most eager to hire out and delegate? Cause those are two very, it's like left and right brain, right? Cause the technical side can be like handbook, here we go. But the strategy is a little bit more uniquely catered to each customer or client that you have.
Yeah, no questions, hands down, strategy. So I am a vision, like I identify as a visionary, and to my detriment sometimes, like I am head in the clouds, like big picture, ideas. And I think I know that I feel so fulfilled and lit up by meeting with people and really having those huge, huge, big ideas that are going to really change the game for them, right? And that comes from that clarity portion most of the time. Sometimes, you know, into the messaging and all of that, right? But it's really that like total breakdown of like, and you have to come into it with no ego, honestly. So that's what it is. It's kind of coming into, I love working with people who are just so open to ideas and change, because here's the thing. If you keep doing the same thing that you've been doing, you know, the result that will happen. Right. And so I love people who want to dig beyond that and get a little uncomfortable, and I will come to the table, and I'm not part of your business. Right. So that's the beauty of it. I can come and give my perspective from someone who's not been ingrained in this thing, right, for years and years and years, and just be like, oh, have we thought about it this way? That is where the magic has been happening, and I'm really enjoying that part of it. And then yes, in terms of the other pieces, I'm actively, like I have people that are helping me execute that, and I'm actively working on building additional partnerships to streamline those things as well, because I do, people need all the support across the board. So
do you ever, like, how involved do you get in analyzing the product itself? Like, you know, if someone has a service, you know, like in the example of an attorney or a lawyer, it's like, okay, you know, that's maybe a little bit harder. But if they have a product that they're offering, do you ever dive into that and go like, man, maybe part of your problem is your product kind of sucks?
Yeah, I will. I definitely will. Also, there's, yeah, so no, that's what I mean. I'll come in and I'll be super honest about how I'm feeling about
things. That's good.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the thing though. Sometimes the product does need to be complete. I had a customer who, one of their ingredients was something that was really kind of, it wasn't a bad ingredient. It just had a weird negative connotation. And we just kept running into problems with the marketing around it. And they're all about trust and everything and natural. And I was just like, you guys really got to change this formula. And they did, you know, so that's an extreme, because that product was something that I'd been working on for years and they changed the freaking formula, you know, but other times it's just, how are we packaging things? So I spoke to a client who had an e-commerce product where it was a very niche audience, and this audience trains for specific events, right? So it was endurance events. And, you know, they had no bundles or no subscriptions or anything like that of their products. And we discussed repackaging them to, you know, into a landing page specific to those events. So like triathlon, right? And saying, you know, when's your event? Let's get you into a funnel that gives you a personalized subscription leading up to that event based on the needs of your endurance goals, right? So maybe it's just a different way to package things. And even to your point with like lawyers, stuff like that, also just a different way to get people in the door. I spoke to actually a lawyer the other day, and she has this long, 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 long form for getting people to contact them. But she has three different areas of expertise. And so that's why the form was so long, is because she has to kind of hit the buttons for everyone. And on top of that, you know, I analyzed her process after the form, like what happens here, what are you trying to get, and what's next. And basically from there, like I said, well, why don't we maybe just rethink this, and you offer a free initial call, and you say, here, let's get on a 20-minute call, and you know, I don't know, we're going to experiment on some of these different things. But basically you can rethink literally any type of product or offering, any type of business from square one, honestly. And yeah, sometimes it's the actual physical, but a lot of times I find it's just the changing and the rethinking of how we're packaging and positioning. So it's the offer development of like the product, and then how we're communicating that in oftentimes a way that they've never thought that makes all the sense in the world to me. So yeah.
Hey, we've got a unicorn here. We have someone who's actually using their college education.
Oh my gosh.
So the branding process is absolutely important.
Oh my gosh.
For where they are coming from to where they're going to, because it's sounding like the stagnant part of it is just not going to bring them anything.
Right. And I think a lot of times when people think about branding, they are thinking about, oh, what pretty colors am I going to pick, and what logo, and what is my font going to look like?
That's not brand.
That's not exactly. Yeah. But a lot of people think that of branding, and that's part of it, right? But no, it really is what is your story, but more than that, it is what is the value that you, what is the unique value that you actually bring to the table? But who, and who should be listening to this? Who would is this for? And why should they choose you over everybody else out there? Like, what makes it unique and what makes it different? And there's a lot of work that I believe, there's a lot of money, I believe, I know that businesses are leaving on the table by not really digging into this type of thing and doing the work up front to figure out what is going to be, basically to figure out their clarity, to figure out, unearth that and test the different options if we have different hypotheses, because often we do, and then figure out the best one, right? And use data to drive our decisions as well.
So an example, if you can give our listeners, and I'll throw a little my forethought into this. So a lot of times we look at our selling point, our unique selling point, we should say, we're always saying great customer service. Mm. You hear that like all the time, great customer service.
That's not unique.
No, how do you get past that? I think because our listeners most likely are going to say, well, our unique selling point is that we're there for the customer 24/7. That's nice. But what are some of the things that you can pry out of our inner thoughts, I guess is the best way to say it.
Well, first of all, I would say who are your customers? Because a lot of times people say, oh, well, we help everybody. We're always there for them. We do everything. We're for everybody and we can help everybody do everything. And I'm like, do you understand that I understand that you were trying to cast a wide net and we want to reach as many people as possible increase the amount of people that will have exposure to our product and more dollars in our pocket, right? The reality is when you try to speak to everybody, it's like screaming in a giant like party with hundreds of people. It's like trying to have an intimate conversation and screaming it and trying to talk to everybody at the same time. It's not going to work.
You end up talking to no one.
Exactly. When you try to speak to everyone, you dilute yourself so terribly that you end up resonating with no one, with literally no one. So the key here is to understand who are these customers that you are there for, and just being there for them and being, you know, we're there for them 24/7. Like, what does that actually mean? So I always try to ask people to dig deeper into the actual pain points and actual desires of their customers. So for instance, an exercise that I'm working on, I'm calling it for what. And basically you say, what do you sell? Or like, what do you offer? Right. And then for what? Like,
what problem are you solving?
Right. And then for what though? And you ask it four times. And sometimes it gets pretty difficult at the end, but in the end, you get to this way deeper pain point or desire of your customers than is really truly on the surface. And that's what you need to be speaking to and not just saying we're there for you. It's like, no, no, no. We solve this, or we make your life this that you actually want it to be. So, I mean, we could literally go through any example, but,
you're trying to connect to a feeling.
You're trying
to dig down past like the surface level to like a feeling. Like so many of the most powerful brands in the world, like that's what they're trying to evoke. They're trying to evoke a feeling or connect to a feeling. I mean, if you look at some of the biggest national ads like Coca-Cola or even just your generic insurance company, mm-hmm. Geico, whatever, like they're trying to connect to a feeling, whether it be emotional or humor or whatever. It's a lot of times like, and it sounds like what you're trying to do is drill down to connect. Like, how do we connect your product or service to some kind of feeling? Because like, believe it or not, like whether we like it or not, as much as we like to say we're rational, we're really not. Like, we're very emotional human beings. And so if you can connect on that level, I mean, it's a whole nother level of power that you can have through that advertising medium.
Absolutely. But it's more, I just want to say, it's more than just feeling. You can tap into emotion, but it's really about desire. It's the desire, the deepest desire. That is what we're going for. No, literally, it's such a fun word, but that's literally what it all comes down to. And I really believe that marketing is truly just matchmaking. I think it removes all the ickiness when you think about it that way, because I really think that everybody that has a business everybody has some value to bring, but every business, they have something unique that they bring to the table. And guess what? It is not for everyone. So it's going to feel heavy when you're trying to push it into everybody's faces. But there are people that are the perfect match for you. There are people who need your services who are going to benefit from this. And it's really just making that match of the messaging.
I like the emotional part of it. Mm-hmm. Creatures of habit, we all are emotional, right?
Yeah.
But the thing that comes to my head is Ben just said, the insurance companies that, you know, they are, you know, one of the ones that are
out there that are promoting something like Geico. And what just came to my head is State Farm, like a good neighbor. State Farm is the mm-hmm. here. And that's really catchy, but it also resonates. Mm-hmm. And so making that resonate feeling, as we're going to call it, or emotional feeling, I love the ideas of how you can blend that in when mm-hmm. you're trying to make that unique selling point.
Totally. And I think, yeah, emotion is very important. I mean, I want to... If I can, I feel like if I gave you guys a couple of examples of recent people, this might actually help you understand, because it actually doesn't even have to be so high level. It's literally so like, it's just a flip of like, okay. So for instance, I was working with a photographer and he already is niche. Okay. He's a maternity photographer. So he's like, I am niche. Like, what's going on? My sales are down. I don't understand what's happening. So I'm like, let's talk, like, let's dig into what's going on. So first of all, his whole website was, you know, get in touch to figure out your pricing or whatever that looks like. And I said, no. First of all, we need to make it abundantly easy for people to choose something self-service, kind of e-commerce your offerings here. And we basically built some packages for different tiers of service for moms that were expecting. And that helped already a lot, kind of putting people through an actual checkout process. It also freed him a lot of time, you know. But here's where it got really fun. Things still weren't really moving as much as he wanted. And I asked him to do an exercise where I said, I want you to go and look at the top like 10 women that you've worked with in terms of they spent the most with you. They were the most wonderful to work with. If you could choose to work with 50,000 of these women for the rest of your, you know, photographer career, it would be replicas of these women. So not the pain in the butt ones that spent a lot, but the really good ones that spent a lot, that were just really resonated like with
ideal avatar.
Correct. But actually, since his and people, this can be done on different scales, but you know, he had people in mind, right? And I said, literally go look at their socials. I gave him a whole exercise. Look at their social media. What have they been posting? What are they saying? How do they dress? When they came into you, what were they talking about? What are their husbands? What do they do? He came back to me with basically 20 bullet points of some things. And out of these bullet points, I was like, I called him immediately and we had an hour long conversation and it changed his entire like thinking. It was on his website. He was saying all these things like, you're beautiful, mama. I make you feel like it's an insecure time, but I make you feel beautiful no matter what. And like, this is the most important part of your life that now you're a mom. That's the messaging he was using. And that's the messaging most maternity photographers use in this area. And what we found was these women, like it was abundantly clear that they were single, older moms by choice, single or divorced, power boss babes. They were doctors, lawyers. They had built businesses for themselves. They had done all these things in their life and had put off having kids because it wasn't that important to them and it was not a priority. In fact, he said a lot of them even talked to him about how they weren't even that excited to be moms, but they were like, this is just the next thing that I'm doing with my life, you know? And he said that they were coming in with Lululemon, you know, they had the jewelry that, and I said, scratch all the packages that we just made. What does this woman want from you? And I was like, what do they want? If we could rebuild your packages, let's go from the top down. And he was like, well, they would probably want custom makeup, hair and makeup, and they would probably want a wardrobe, and they'd probably want these type. I actually had a woman who had me model her shoot off of Beyonce's baby shoot. And I was like, pull up the pictures. We're using these pictures on your homepage. We tripled his prices, changed his offerings, right? Because like there was more now that he's adding to them. But, and then completely, I asked him to completely change all the messaging to speak to the woman and say, we shoot you as the full woman you are. You are not just a mom. You have built this whole, you know, this is totally different than what any other maternity freaking photographer is doing. And he can carve a space out for him within this already niched space. So that is just
a niche
one,
of a niche.
Correct.
Yeah, their experience brought to reality.
Correct. And so that's just one example where it's like, we're not really talking about emotion here. We're not talking about some floofy like branding thing. It was just a decision, like a change in the way he's positioning himself to a new customer. Like that's why it's so important to know who your customers are and use the actual data, not just what you think they are or what you think they want to hear or what everybody else is saying to people in this niche. Like, what do you, what do you bring, and who are your people, and who do you want to work with? So that's just like one example, if that makes sense.
I want to tie this back to the very beginning.
Yeah.
Abundance mindset, because I had just a thought as you were talking, which I really think that part of the, oh, I'm trying to appeal to everyone, is mm-hmm. actually another manifestation of that scarcity mindset, because right. people are afraid if I get too niche, there won't be enough people for my business. Mm-hmm. But you're kind of approaching from the opposite of like, no, abundance mindset. If you find your target audience, there will be more than you can handle.
Here's the thing. When people read like these women that are going to come to his site, right? Because I got that pushback from him. He was like, well, I don't know if it's going to work. And here's the thing. You can test it. You use a landing page. We test it.
You
we
can
run
always
some ads.
Change it back.
Yes. And you inform, you use the data to inform the decision. I feel very strongly about this direction, but I'm not, of course, not opposed to testing. Anyway, when you go all in, people feel that you are all in on them. They feel that. And talk about the experience. You are literally creating that experience, and it's tangible. Like, you are then able, knowing so specifically who they are, and being so in tune with that, you were able to create messaging that quite literally sounds like it's coming from their mouths and their minds. And they will literally feel like this is meant for them. And there's no, basically, to have 100% of those people is, you know, that's the difference between having like maybe 1% of like the pie. It's like now you have 100% of these people all bought in, all super loyal to you. And you've carved out this unique authority in this space as well. So
how did those changes work for the photographer?
So he's still working on those changes. This was like a very recent.
Okay.
But yeah.
You talk about tripling prices. Like, that's a bold move.
No, I know. Yeah. But he's working on the landing pages and stuff right now. But yeah, and we're going to test them with some ads, because again, these are some things that you don't have to just make all the changes on your homepage. You build a landing page with a new idea. You run some ads to it, only to that landing page. You make the landing page not crawlable anywhere else. And this is the perfect way to test a totally new funnel. That's what I love to do with some clients.
I love that strategy.
Oh my God, it's
and
huge.
And then are you introducing him to like, hey, here are some metrics that you need to be tracking along the way?
Of course. So everything, yeah, we need to know what success looks like. So that's all part of it, is identifying your KPIs. So basically he's going to have to be looking at, we're going to be looking at engagement metrics. So like the actual ads, because we're going to be using that messaging. And when you think about testing a new hypothesis like this, it can be quickest to get data from the ads themselves, because that's the fastest way to get eyeballs on the new message. Obviously post-click is less people clicking and you get less data. So we're gonna be looking at the engagement metrics on the ads themselves. So click-throughs and rate, things like that. And then we're going to be looking at various actions on his site. So whether they went through parts of the funnel, how far they got and the drop-offs. And then obviously conversion rate is like one of the major ones, but then also average order value, AOV. So we're going to be looking at the combination of conversion rate and average order value, because that is going to, that adds up to the change in the revenue in total compared to his other structure, which might have had a higher conversion rate, possibly because it was lower priced. But when you combine conversion rate and average order value, it can skyrocket things.
Do you also have people focus on CAC and LTV?
Yeah. So with him, yes, of course, but it depends.
Just to explain to our audience, CAC is cost to acquire a customer. So for every dollar of ads you spend, or $100, like how much does it cost you to get a new customer? Then LTV is the long-term value of that customer, like on average over the lifetime of however long that customer is with you, how much money they spend.
Yeah, those are two really incredible key metrics. I use them all the time with my clients. Especially when I was working a lot in the agency side, it's like we have to look at those things. When companies, every single time as possible, that's also something I'm working on him with. I'm like, well, what do these ladies say that they want to do with the images? Can we get them giant canvases for their walls? And he's like, yeah, they actually do want giant one. They want this 8 feet or something. I was like, okay, why are you not offering that after the fact? Can we do like a special bespoke like table, you know, decor book thing. I don't know, right? So that's all part of the LTV piece. Basically, it's abundantly more effective to keep and to continue selling to a current customer than to have to go out and acquire a new one. So, but you do have to look at both. So yes, the initial customer acquisition cost is something that every company should be keeping in mind if you're running ads. And then LTV is a really, really important lever to pull just really quick for e-commerce. Like having a post-purchase upsell, for instance, is from my experience, the number one thing for LTV. It's like amazing.
Well, also, and if it's like, you know, if you're like, if you're saying, okay, well, if it costs me $1,000 to get a customer, but they're only spending $1,000 with me, then I'm just breaking even. Like best case scenario.
You need to think about, the profitability.
So that's why those metrics are so powerful, because it really gives you a bigger picture of the cost of those leads and then what you're actually gaining, the benefit you're getting from those leads. Otherwise, correct, you don't even know the state of your business and how healthy it is.
Right. It's also incredibly important for companies that have like subscription models or, you know, that type of thing going on, because you need to be very aware of it, because, you know, if you don't have those numbers, you know, maybe what your typical churn rate looks like as well. And what, you know, your average LTV is, I mean, that is so important, because you don't want to be looking at the numbers. Maybe they don't actually work out until 4 months in. Right. So you need to know that very clearly for that type of business.
It's one of the reasons why I asked earlier about the whole, like, you know, does their product suck thing, because that makes your CAC go way up. Because, you know, people talk about word of mouth in a positive way, but you can have word of mouth in a negative way of, I tried this and it was horrible. You know, that's why people love to read reviews on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
And so it's one of those like really powerful things, is to look at, like, you have your customer satisfaction. But because, like, if your CAC is going up a lot, it could be a sign that you have some headwinds working against you because of bad customer service or bad customer experiences, and you're having to, and you have a high churn rate. You don't have people coming back because they didn't like the first time.
Well, customer acquisition cost, I hear you. Customer acquisition cost, I don't know, would be, customer acquisition cost is all about prospecting. So,
but if you're getting word of mouth or referrals, you're getting people for free.
True. Okay. So if you're looking at it, you're looking at it more. Okay. I understand. I understand.
Or maybe you run a promo and it's like, you know, hey, here's a, you know, hey, thanks for coming to our massage parlor. Here's a $20 gift card that you have to give to someone else.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now if you, that's $20 to acquire that new customer, but maybe you would have spent $100 in ads before. So that's kind of what I'm
referring to. Generally. So I am very picky with who I work with. I like people who are going to be open to me making recommendations on their actual product if there is not a product market misalignment, or just the product, it's just not something that I feel I can effectively sell for you or feel comfortable selling to people. I will literally just not work with them, or if they're like, wait, why, and they want to learn more, like, I will straight up tell them why. Again, this is where ego is a thing. I want to work with companies that do have value to bring to the world, and there are people out there who need what they have to offer, because I like playing that matchmaker role.
100%. Paul, you have anything else?
No, I have loved this conversation. It's opened my eyes. Being an entrepreneur myself and having several businesses, I always look at how can I improve, and then I get shy and I step back. I have the abundance mindset. That's already there. But sometimes stepping outside my box, an example is doing this podcast with Ben. It took a long minute for me actually to do this actual versus like,
yeah, I think I chased you down for like 3 months.
He did. And I was literally,
I was persistent. I'm like, I'm going to annoy the shit out of Paul.
Yeah.
He's going to hate me.
Yeah. But I just didn't know. It wasn't my comfort zone.
Right.
I'm a public speaker, so I have no problem speaking in public. But trying to do this in enclosed walls and being interviewed, now I feel like, okay, am I claustrophobic, or what kind of nervous feel am I getting?
So the mic is intimidating.
Yeah, the mic is intimidating. But, you know, speaking with you tonight and opening our eyes to not just the four C's, but really getting into the inner soul of somebody because the metaphysical part is where we started with here, let's break out with the reset in the morning and here, blah, 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 blah. But really getting into and diving into the emotional part of it and talking about the emotional part of it is huge, because that allows me, myself only, to like break out of my shell a little more. The more we do these podcasts, the more I break out of my shell. So I have a lot more fun with it.
Yeah.
But it also lets me think about, okay, what am I trying to get to the audience? Like, really, what essence do we really want to give them? And your presence tonight is eye-opening, absolutely eye-opening.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much. We could talk for another hour. It's already been an hour, believe it or not. But thank you so much. Closing thoughts, if you had like a couple tips that you wanted to give to audience, young businesses, if they wanted to apply some of this themselves, just like a couple quick little tidbits that you would give them.
Yeah, I would say that I'm approaching the conversations with entrepreneurs of like, what is your unique, business owners, what was the unique value you bring? Like, I just encourage, I'm doing this myself every day. I think we all have something within us. Like, talk about the diamond. I genuinely feel like there is this like unearthed treasure within everybody. Sounds a little like, you know, but generally it's just like, there is a unique brilliance that you have, that there's something that lights you up. There's something that doesn't feel heavy. And maybe you're pursuing something that feels heavy, that feels bogged down, or maybe there's a part of that that lights you up. And I would just really encourage people to dig deep and try to unearth that and really lean in to what that thing is that really truly lights them up, and go all in on that. And even if no one else is doing just that, maybe if you're like, oh, well, that's not going to work that way. No, how will it work for you? Like, build the business to feel light, to feel like easy, and at the forefront place, you know, that'll make it so much easier for you to just provide that value and have that abundance mindset and the giving first. And it's just gonna, it'll all just flow from there. I think it's just try to have fun, like make room for more fun, and try to do what makes you actually feel fulfilled and provide the value. And I think that it's just the best thing that you can do. It will all just flow from there. It'll just come naturally.
I love that fun piece, because I am like type A to a fault, I think. And sometimes I need to be reminded to like enjoy the fact that like I'm in the mountains today and it's beautiful. And I should just like enjoy this and not fuck, like I could get home. I have reports to write.
Everybody, it's always going to have things that we can't just be like, oh, well, taxes aren't fun, so we're not going to, that's not light. That doesn't feel light. So we're just not going to do it. Like, no, like that's not what I'm saying here, but what
sorry,
I am.
Sorry, Uncle Sam, this feels like a burden.
Yeah, this feels like, but I am saying just lean in to what lights you up, because I think that's a sign that the world is meant, that there's people out there that want that from you, that there's people that are waiting to, you know, receive that value from you. And I think that that's really important to listen to.
I agree. Well, everyone, thank you all so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. And Sarah, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Oh yeah. I mean, so right now I'm transitioning between brand names. I have like 7 domains I'm considering, but I am Sarah Ackerman, Sarah with an H, on LinkedIn. And then right now my current, agency and fractional CMO website is smoothiecom.com, but it's likely changing, but that's smoothie like the drink and then com.com.
Amazing. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you everyone for listening. Please like, subscribe, and share this if you found this helpful, and we will see you in the next one.